Yeah, g'day everyone. Welcome to the Tripod Live with Clarkie and Winnie. We're here with you for the next 30 minutes to recap everything we've just seen in the Easter long weekend, round six of the NRL. Bunnies demolish the Doggies. Dolphins shock everyone again, and the Broncos win streak is finally snapped. With that, let me hand it over to my co-host Winnie to welcome everyone in and recap our best bets. How are you, Winnie?
Good, thanks, mate. There were a couple of upsets, weren't there? And I was upset after losing week of best bets, my worst best bet of the year, which was Manly. We'll get to that. That dropped us to just 1-2 on the best bets for the round. But on a positive note, we still won the mixed matchup. That was the one silver lining out of that Manly game, which we can touch on as well. We lost the better multi. I made it a little bit different this week, but either way, it lost. And I give you credit too, because I gave you a short list of players to pick for your take on Toppy, try scorer, where Toppy was willing to give aggressive odds on several players. But you said, to be honest, you just didn't really like any of them. And that's the thing about us. We're not going to tip something for the sake of it. We're only going to tip something we'll stand behind. So I really respected your integrity there. And guess what? None of them scored. So a bad bet avoided is just as good as a winning bet made sometimes.
Absolutely, it is. And, you know, this season is so unpredictable. There's so many results in this round that really did shock me. And the mixed matchup, boy, that got a lot closer than I would have liked. I thought we were pretty well home and hosed, but a bit of a
nervous moment.
They all
cashed the same
there.
In the end, though, luckily.
Exactly right. All right, guys, let's move on to Thursday night footy. We had the Melbourne Storm defeat the Sydney Roosters 28-8. My MVP was Cam Munster. He was just at his best, creating opportunities every time he touched it. Now, I tipped Storm in this one, Winnie, and I tipped them. I said, I think this will be close, which I was wrong, but I said, I'm just underestimating this side. And in a way, they vindicated that completely with a dominant performance over the Sydney Roosters.
Yes, that's right. To me, that just looked like they actually almost acknowledged the Roosters are the better team. So the Storm came in and said, well, the only way we win this game, we've got to roll up our sleeves. We've got to fight harder than our opponent that maybe has more talent, maybe little bit better roster at this point in the season. Whereas the Roosters were the opposite. They did score the first try. They kind of looked like they were just going through the motions and thinking that things were going to happen. And after scoring the first try, the Storm scored the next five in the match. Of course, the turning point was probably the Radley sin bin, at which point the Roosters did actually lead 8-6, but the Storm scored twice while he was off. Late hit there. He's got to learn how to temper his aggression, you'd say. And I had the same point there. In tough conditions, an attacking player like Munster still shone, absolute masterclass.
I will say this stat for Victor Radley, Winnie. Once he's been sin bin, the Roosters have never gone on to win a game. So we talk about it being costly, but I think that stat really sums it up. And in the way that he got sin binned, it was really a nothing situation. There was just no need for it. And I've got that marked down as my turning point. From that, the Roosters went down to 41% possession and completed at just 61%. Those are the worst stats I've seen all year. And dare I mention, they missed 42 tackles to the Storm, who only missed 16. Credit to the Storm. I do look at this Roosters side, though. I think the Radley sin bin was pretty crucial. And I'm still confident the Roosters side can rebound and get back to their mojo. I think they can move on pretty quickly from this one. Whereas for the Storm, they look like they're back, and they look like they're back to their best footy this year. And the top four side that a lot of us thought they could be. Friday afternoon, it was the Rabbitohs defeating the Bulldogs 50-16. My MVP was Latrell. Tough to split him and Cody, but Latrell had five try involvements. I thought he had a big one, Winnie. I've said that a few weeks in a row, but finally get it right and Latrell explodes. And this is the scoreline that we end up with.
Yeah, that's right. We said that had to come, and it's great to see him doing what he does best. And this was my best tip of the weekend by far. Line was about 10.5 most places, but certainly to lay 9.5 in a game where the Rabbitohs never really looked like winning by anything other than a massive margin. And that's despite the fact the Dogs scored first, 90-meter break off scrum. And, you know, I talked about Totola being a big inclusion for the Rabbitohs, and it looked like he re-injured his knee in his first carry and in the end played under 30 minutes once he soldiered on, but couldn't return. But, hey, Canterbury were undermanned going into this, which is the reason we liked the Bunnies so much. And then sad news for Dogs fans, obviously losing Addo Carr. And it is hard to lose an outside back, especially one of your game breakers, because you really don't have anyone that's going to cover that position properly. So it was just a tough afternoon for the Dogs. And once the Bunnies got on top, Latrell, for me, we all know what he can do. So I guess how good of a game he has partly is just dictated by how much ball they get, how many gaps they open up in the opposition, and also just how involved he gets. And he certainly got plenty involved in this one with a hat-trick. But then Campbell Graham had a hat-trick too laid onto him, I think a couple of them by Latrell. at the end. So everyone had a bit of a day out for the Bunnies. Luckily for us, we needed just about every single one of those tries because they put 50 on the board for the mixed matchup, which is what we needed Manly to defend on Saturday, and they only just did.
Yeah, we did, especially that Campbell Graham last try. I was doing up the stats for the top performers, and I put him in, and I thought, oh, it could be someone else. And then when he scored that third one, I was like, all right, I've definitely got to include him now. I think we'll start with the Bunnies middles here because we sort of touched on this in the preview where we said, with the Bulldogs so depleted, the Bunnies should get a roll on in the middle here. Once they get a roll on, we just know that's Latrell and Cody Walker's golden ticket to unleash. And unleash they did. In the end, the Rabbitohs ran 600 more metres, 200 of those post-contact. The Doggies gave away 11 penalties, and that sin bin to Jacob Preston. I thought that was a little bit unfair, but I certainly wouldn't go as far as some Doggies fans who are calling this a robbery online. I respect the passion, but I mean, you can't concede 50 and say robbery. But I didn't agree with the sin bin to Jacob Preston. And I will say for the Doggies, Winnie, I don't take anything away from them. They're missing 11 of their top 30, and one of their best attacking weapons went down early in Josh Adokar. Even if it was the Melbourne Storm missing 11 of their top 30 and they lost one of their key players at the start, I wouldn't have tipped them. So I take nothing away from the Doggies here. Tough thing, really tough situation there to overcome from. In the end, the game pretty much goes to script how we all thought it would. This is a game that didn't go to script. The next one on Friday night, the Dolphins. They shocked the Cowboys 32-22. My MVP was Hammer up against his old side, Winnie. If you remember in the preview, I did say I like Drinkwater and Hammer both to score for a multi. Drinkwater finishes with two try assists. He didn't quite get there, but the Hammer, he was my MVP, and he crossed for two. On a personal note, I know you would have loved this game a lot.
Well, the sad part is they're my boys, and both of our teams won again
this
weekend.
I say this every week, don't I?
But I can't really celebrate that when I gave out a best bet that was on the Cowboys. And that's where my allegiances lie, is to our followers, as I always say. And you know what? I got this game wrong because I thought the Cowboys would win and win comfortably. So I got to cop the loss for the best bet. But I still feel hard done by because I thought my execution was spot on taking the Cowboys' second half line. And we're just in a perfect position to win that bet. And in fact, we were covering that bet right up until the Hammer got that ceiling try at the end, which, you know, they're not going to say it. It's unnecessary. They were up six. They wanted to score again to seal the game. But when they didn't need to score a try. In fact, they were looking to try and get a field goal the set before that. And then the only reason the Dolphins had the ball at the end with the opportunity to score and seal the game was quite a miraculous Edric Lee double clutch intercept, or else the Cowboys could have really made them sweat. And I thought the Cowboys were going to come back and win. So I'll rewind to how this game began because there were pendulum swings. But first of all, let's give all the credit in the world to the Dolphins, because the thing is, in a lot of these games, every team has their moments. We saw that just in the game that just ended there with the Tigers against Parramatta when it looked like it was game over. Everyone has their moments. And the momentum was well and truly with the Dolphins in the first half, but they still had the quality to score 26 points when the going was good. And I didn't think they had that in them with their makeshift halves against a good defensive team at home. At least the Cowboys have been that in recent, you know, in the recent last season. It remains to be seen this year, I suppose. We'll talk about that. And a lot of that was errors by the Cowboys that was inviting the Dolphins in. And I thought Marshall King gave them a massive lift and was a big part in the Dolphins being able to rack up those points when the pendulum was swinging their way. And then I ultimately think why the Dolphins won and why they deserved this victory was then when it totally swung back the other way, and that began with a sin binning right before halftime, which meant that the Cowboys were coming out after scoring with 2 minutes to go in the half or in the final couple of minutes of the half. They came out second half knowing they were playing against one less man, and it was basically all Cowboys the first 30 minutes of the second half, pulled the score from 26-6 to 26-22, I thought definitely our best bet's winning. We only needed the Cowboys to be within eight to win that. I thought the Cowboys will still come over the top and win this. But going back to what I said about weathering the storm, or, you know, making the hay when the sun shines, when you've got the ball, that's what the Redcliffe Kings did. And then when they had to defend, when they had to dig in, and when they had to defend a lot of their errors, they were good enough to do that. And, of course, Hamiso, insatiable form, scored every game this year, had a double in this one. And I thought Gilbert against his own side, and he also scored. And then Izarco with a hat-trick was, you know, unreal as well. And I did say on Wednesday, I'll just pose the question again. You're the Cowboys, don't you kind of wish you had the Hammer and Drinky and Dearden as your 1-6-7? That would be a pretty good young core. It's not to be. And in fact, North Queensland's in a little bit of a hole, Clarky, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not in a good spot. And Peyton's comments in the post-game press conference, he said he was sick of the sin bins. Then when he spoke about Hammer, he said some of his actions and words last year is why we released him. But I'm not bitter. And I just thought, it sounds like something didn't go quite right there between him and the club. We spoke in the preview. This is the first time the Dolphins genuinely have to come back from something in their NRL campaign. With Jesse Bromwich ruled out for this one and fourth half combination in as many weeks, I think most smart punters would have been with the Cowboys here, and it wasn't a bad pick at all. But the Cowboys just never gave themselves a chance. I've got them down for a 67% completion and 13 errors. That's more than double the Dolphins, and they also had two sin bins as well. Not a pretty stat at all. Doesn't matter if you're a top four side, if you're at home, if you've got 2012 Ben Barber in your side, if you're putting up silly stats like that, you're not giving yourself a chance to win here. And on the Dolphins side of things, I felt like I was almost a Dolphins fan watching this, if I'm being absolutely honest. Although I tipped the Cowboys and it makes more sense for me to cheer them, given our best bet as well, I just couldn't help but be happy as this Dolphins side just shown so much grit, determination, and really they've shown what a Wayne Bennett side is, dare I say. A special mention to Jeremy Marshall-King as well, Winnie. I saw some stats on Instagram this week. He's got better stats than Harry Grant so far this year. A lot of people view Harry Grant as the benchmark hooker in this competition. I certainly do. And I think that's a real sign to Jeremy Marshall-King and how special he's been to start his season.
Oh, you could see the way he lifted him. And I would say, I'd go as far to say that's about their best performance of the year. Like, you go, well, they won week one against the Roosters, but the Roosters were quite underdone. You could throw in that Broncos loss as their best performance, and that's certainly up there. I mean, they beat the Raiders, but how good are the Raiders? It was in Redcliffe, it was... rainy day and a bit of a grinding match. And then they beat a very depleted Knights. This one, especially the way they had to hang on. And again, thinking about how the Cowboys came third last season, that's up there with just about any performance this year. And they needed it because they had lost back-to-back games. So they avoided a three-game slide getting the Chocolates up in Townsville.
Yeah, I think to summarize all that, I'm going to have to start looking at the Cowboys as the 2023 Cowboys and maybe not counting so much of that 2022 form so much. But Saturday game one was the Penrith Panthers absolutely demolishing the Manly Seagulls 44-12. My MVP was Dil Edwards. He's never scored a hat-trick before, Winnie, but he crossed for four in this game. I think I knew the Panthers were this good, but my assessment of this is I didn't know Manly were this bad. Am I being fair in that assessment or would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I didn't know Manly was this bad either. I wouldn't have tipped him. Matty Blanch asked earlier, is Latrell a flat-track bully? I won't go as far to say that. The Bulldogs have been pretty consistent this year. Then the Bunnies needed the win and Latrell stepped up. But talk about flat-track bullies. Can we say anything better about Manly? Like, they just refuse to actually serve it up to anybody that's a contender. So it really does make you question how good they are. Now, you know how sometimes we say the score doesn't tell the whole story? I do want to say that 44-12 does not tell you the whole story. Penrith were very lucky to win this game. I'm joking.
Penrith, I was going to say.
Yes. I could see you politely nodding and then kind of do a double take. Penrith should have won this by 60 if you watched it. Yeah. So the 32-point margin doesn't tell you the whole story because this was my worst tip of the season. Yes, Schuster got ruled out after I tipped it, but that's no excuse. It wouldn't have changed anything. Go back into every single best bet I've given out this year. They haven't all won. I think we're 9-7, but you would have been happy to be on any of them, even going into like second halves of these games. They're in positions to win, not this one. I had Manly plus 11.5, never a hope. It's going to happen from time to time. You're just going to get a team that's just horrible, just doesn't show up. And then the handicap kind of goes out the window because, Penrith are great. Penrith were at home. It was all the reasons not to go against Penrith any week. But the fact is, Manly would not have beat any of the other 16 teams in the competition with that performance. And the thing about playing Penrith is they'll wear you out, they'll pulverize you, and they'll ultimately pull you apart. They'll ultimately gas you, and then the points can flood in, and they can make a scoreline ugly just in the final 10 minutes of each half. But that's not what happened here. Manly were just horrendous from the beginning. I mean, the first try, it's like a game of Oztag. Great, all credit to Edwards. He does score four tries. But he goes through untouched when there was no overlap on the right-hand side. And then just so many little things Manly did. Like Manly got a penalty, kicked for touch, and they tapped it and threw it to DCE to have the first hit up. So he catches it and just runs and gets smashed by the Penrith defense. I'm just like, what's going on? This is like 5 minutes into the game. And I would like to know the stats on this. I should have checked, but I wasn't sure how to break it down by half. But that had to be close to a record most missed tackles I've ever seen in a half, in that first half. Like, I don't know what was happened, what was wrong. And what was going through my mind is they're still just juiced from the Mudgee game. Like, that 90 minutes has taken a bigger toll than I could have realised. But that's not a fair excuse either when you saw how Newcastle went a day later. So I'd love to hear other people's answers. I'd love to hear what you reckon, Clarkie, because, yeah, I've got to give credit to Penrith. I've said all year that they're still the best team in the competition, even though their form was down. And, yeah, Edwards had four tries. But what can we say about Manly other than, you know, are they total frauds? The only positive I'll give them is they didn't completely capitulate. They didn't, because they got a little bit of ball and did score a couple of tries at the end, it just let the clock run enough before Penrith could get to 50, which they looked very high likelihood of getting. And that would have beaten our mixed matchup, which I early crowed on Friday and already said it had won in the group. So I would have been in a lot of trouble with the followers if that had not ended up being the case. So I'm thankful that I got away with it, and I'll be much more careful with my early crows, any voodoo or any superstitions moving forward.
Well, mate, I can only really find one positive for Manly in that one. That's Jake Trbojevic with 45 tackles and zero misses. If all 17 played with his effort, they would have won, but they simply didn't. It was 32-0 at halftime. And luckily for our mixed matchup, Penrith decided to take it easy in that second half, because had they have kept playing the way they were in the first half, I can't really look at that second half and say Manly improved. I think more so Penrith were just a little bit, well, we've already won, so who cares? Manly have already had a bye this year as well. So although there was a taxing 90 minutes the week before, you've already had a break this year earlier than any other season in history.
And it's not a short turnaround. It's a seven-day turnaround. You know, if had it been 90 minutes and a short turnaround, kind of like the Doggies had to go Sunday to Friday, you can find more excuses for them.
And I need to start with the elephant in the room. I've mentioned one of the Trbojevic brothers, but the other one, Tom, he only ran 98 metres. He looked injured. It was later revealed he was having back spasms and needed painkilling injections to play on. And every time I talk about Manly, I go back to this guy. The stats show they simply cannot make the top eight without him. I think if he was to go down and not play a game this year, they'd finish with something like seven wins using statistics from his previous injuries. It's not enough. And so when Tom plays like that, Manly are no hope as it is, let alone what we saw. And look, had I known Tom was injured before this game, genuinely, I'm not lying, I wouldn't have touched Manly at plus 24 if you doubled that line. If I knew Tom was injured and he wouldn't even run 100 metres, I wouldn't have touched that line if it was doubled. He's just too important to their side. Panthers' attack was simply flowing. It's fun to watch when they're in a mood like that. They finished with almost double the metres gained to Manly and one third of the missed tackles. The thing with Penrith is, Winnie, you can't beat yourself. There's teams like the Titans and the Tigers and some of the sides that are closer to the bottom where you can stuff up a fair bit and still come away with the win. You can't do it against Penrith, and it's as simple as what you see with that scoreline, if I'm absolutely honest. Saturday game two, the Raiders absolutely shocked the Broncos 20-14. My MVP was Jordan Rapana, who unfortunately didn't finish the game. I don't know where to start with this one. I certainly didn't see it coming, so I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, yeah, I didn't see it coming either. I don't think many people did. I said if you're a true believer in the Raiders, that could be their bounce-back spot because they were so embarrassed last week. Could Ricky get a response out of his men? He did just that. You know, in fact, the determination that the Green Machine showed coming into Brisbane, knowing it was a very hostile environment and a very tough opponent to play, and that they just had to give everything to give themselves a chance and then just hope it was tight and that they could pull it out. That's what I wanted from Manly. Apparently, that was way too much to ask for Manly, but this is what the Raiders did, and they just reminded us all that these games aren't played on paper and that form does not automatically carry over week to week, and the recipe for an upset always involves these lesser teams, I say in inverted commas, just wanting it more. You know, rugby league's a game of skill, but it is a game of will and motivation as well. And so I take my hat off to the Raiders for coming up to Suncorp and putting up that performance when you consider they were already 14.5-point favourites because, of course, Whiten's still suspended. Just mentioned before, 53 put on them at home. a week earlier. And then Tapanay doesn't travel with the team. Wife, you know, get in labor. So that's your best forward out as well. But they were just up for the fight. What they did really well was limited the Brisbane go forward that Brisbane has enjoyed so far this season. The other forwards stepping up. I mean, you talked about Rapana. You can't go past his performance. And hopefully he's recovering all right from the nasty knock, which we can get to because it's a controversial play at the end. But I was looking at Papali'i, Hudson Young really stepping up, and their halfback too, because everyone talks about the command that Reynolds plays with, but Fogarty had a great game in this one, really stepped up. And why did Brisbane, you know, fall short as well? They missed opportunities. They'd like a few back. You know, I think about one where Walsh goes for a flick offload pass when he ends up a meter over the line, for example. But maybe you want to touch on that controversial finish, Clarky. Maybe others want to weigh in, but maybe tell us how you saw the game first and we can finish on that point.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think before I touch on the game real quickly, I'm interested to watch Manly next week because they were pumped by Penrith just like Raiders were last week. So I'm interested to see if Seibold can get the same sort of response that Ricky Stewart did. This was a classic Ricky Stewart win where you could sort of tell he told his troops, we're up against it. No one expects us to win. We're not going to win if we go out and play fancy. We need to play tough and gritty. And that's what they did for 80 minutes. I will fully admit, once I saw that Joseph Tarpany was ruled out of this, I would have tipped the Broncos with 200% confidence because Tarpany is so important to this Raiders side. But to the rest of their forward pack's credit, they really did stand up and face up to the Brisbane might of their forward pack, which has been one of the best all season, if not the best. I guess, yeah, the final defining moment. There's no rule that says if a player is catching a ball, leaning forward to do so, and someone unexpectedly knees them in their head and splits them, then it's penalty or play on. It's not in the rule book, right? I can understand there's an element of recklessness to what Martin Taupau did, coming through with, I guess, the knees sort of going towards Rapana's head. Rapana does sort of dive at the last second. But ultimately, I am, and because it's not the rule book, Winnie, this is purely opinion. I can't go to anything here, but myself personally, I'm comfortable that the responsibility lies with the defender to not put the attacker in a dangerous position. And although Martin Taupau, this is a complete freak accident, he did put Rapana in a dangerous situation there. So I don't take anything away from Taupau or look at him in any different, like, complete accident. He should not be suspended, but I do think it has to be a penalty. I am interested. I didn't see it personally, but I've had a few messages that Capewell was about 4 meters offside. And he would have definitely come within 10 metres there of Rapana, which would have been a penalty to the Raiders anyway. I didn't see that. How did you see the game? Sorry, that situation.
Yeah, let's not act like it decided the game because it was a call, who, depending on who ended up with the ball, the Broncos could have had a set to, you know, if they could have scored level at best, right, at this point in the game. So it's not like it decided who won, and it's not fair for Brisbane fans to blame that. I don't like the call. The simple reason is it's an accident, as you said. His head has hit the knee of an oncoming defender, but his head was at knee height. Like, he's diving forward to catch it. Now, I think justice is served because I actually thought earlier in the game there were multiple knock-on calls that all went Brisbane's way. There's one where I think Rapana is catching it in the air and they say that he knocked it forwards, but then it hit his own leg and then went backwards. Someone tell me if I've got the rule book wrong, but, like, to me, that's ultimately backwards off him. And there was another one where Capewell played at a kick in behind from Fogarty and then Seb Chris kind of touched it as he was picking it up. And I thought it was clearly backwards and it would have been a fresh set for the Raiders and they called that knock on. So, and the other reason I think it was justice is because I think, or Rapana didn't drop the ball because of the pressure. He caught the bomb very bravely and cleanly, and he only dropped it after the contact to his head with the knee. So you could almost argue it's like you're not even giving a penalty. It's more like you're stopping the game for the injury. And so, you know, sometimes a player gets injured and then immediately lets go of the ball, and sometimes they actually don't call knock on because there's that discretion. I saw it more like that, that it would have been so unfair for him to get that inadvertent knee and, you know, it looked horrible. The blood's pouring out instantly. And if that did give Brisbane a chance to win the game, because they didn't really do enough to deserve it. Now, I know Brisbane fans don't want to hear about what's fair or unfair. They want the correct call. And I do think it was a tough one for them. But overall, look, the team that deserved to win, I think ultimately got the 2 points.
And let me just say, calls go both ways throughout 79 minutes, but there's this sort of stigma, maybe not stigma is the right word, but there's this, I'm not sure what word to use. Yeah, where fans will really focus on the calls in the last 5 minutes and go, we were robbed because of this, but they might have got five calls earlier in the game that also played an impact on the result. And so I think you look at the 80 minutes there, Winnie, and the better side won. I think most footy fans can agree with that. I think instead of Broncos fans being disappointed with that call, they should probably be disappointed with their team's effort, because this was by far the worst game the Broncos have served up so far this year. But I do think they'll still come back. They'll be fine. Every team needs a loss to kick back into motion. Sunday, game one, the Titans defeat the Dragons 20-18. You know, I love it. My MVP was Phil Sammy, who had close to 300 meters. I don't think I've been this happy after a win in a long time, Winnie. And I'm happy we weren't recording on Sunday, because I'd lost my voice by that stage. Your thoughts on this one, please.
Well, I'm happy for you. And another man who was happy, was in attendance, is Tristan from Toppy, who, of course, proudly sponsor this show as well as the Titans. And he sent me a clip to say how the bookies went this weekend. Why don't we hear from him? He probably touches on this game as well.
G'day, everyone. It's Tristan Merlihan here from Top Sport. And round six of the NRL again saw a couple of big upsets and a couple of well-back favourites that won. So like we've seen all throughout the season, it's been a very, very competitive start to the year. The first game of the round saw the Storm. They were backed very, very heavily late, which I was a little bit surprised. I thought the money may have come for the Roosters, but they certainly got the chocolates there, the Storm, and that was an ordinary result to start the weekend, as well as the Bunnies giving the Bulldogs a bit of a hiding there on Good Friday. They were very, very well backed all weekend, and a lot of multis running through the Bunnies. However, from our perspective, the multis certainly ran through the Cowboys, and the Dolphins getting another upset result was very handy from our end. The Dolphins are certainly turning into one of Top Sport's favourite teams, because they've got a couple of very, very big upsets to start the season, which has been great to see a new team come into the comp and being so competitive. Panthers were well supported. The Miners there obviously covered. They almost got the mixed matchup, but Jacob's early crow almost proved a little bit costly, but they just held on in that sense. And then one of the biggest upsets I've seen for a long time was the Broncos against the Raiders, where the Raiders, after their pretty ordinary performance last weekend, came and bounced back and again knocked out a few multis in that sense. The Sunday games, there wasn't a massive amount of activity. They're both pretty even betty games, which saw money on both sides of the ledger. So wasn't a massive difference from our perspective, but obviously very happy to be out there at the Top Sport Lounge and see the Titans get the job to put themselves into the top eight. So we've got one game left for the weekend. I'm recording this before it starts, and obviously the Eels are very, very short price favourites. We'll see if Lightning can strike twice with the Tigers doing something special like they did last year. Hope everyone had a great Easter. Hope you're back to winner, and as always, gamble responsibly.
Thanks, Tristan. I got a quick funny story there, Clarkie. Couple of times over the last two or three years, I've tried to twist Tristan's arm to give us an early payout on the mixed matchup when the first leg's just gone really well. And I always know anything can happen in footy. And, you know, even if you're in an awesome position where you're $1.03 to win, it's good for, like, I say to Tristan, it's good marketing if we just tell everyone they've already won. We don't even have to watch the second game. And he did it for us. Like, there was a game in, the COVID round that got postponed, and we had a Mitch matchup that was, like, almost a sure thing to win, and he did paid it out early and stuff. So we always, you know, appreciate that. And so I DM'd him and said, you know, would you pay that one out early, 50 on the board for the Bunnies? And Tristan said, oh, I would prefer to just let it play out, you know. We did see Penrith score a week earlier, score 53. So I said, fair enough, you know, it won't matter. And then it nearly needed that early payout. Yeah, as you say, 32 on the board at halftime by Penrith. Luckily, they put the queue in the rack. So we got the better of the bookies with that. But the bookies, as Tristan alludes to, they love these pretty safe head-to-heads getting rolled, because everyone throws them in their multis. And so, as Tristan said, Cowboys knocked out a lot of multis Friday night, and then anyone who reloaded probably put Brisbane in. So I think he's happy enough with the weekend results, especially your Titans getting up. So why don't I talk about that game? It was lower scoring than I expected. I think both teams blew chances, but I think you also saw the desperation there. I think whoever won was going to end up in the top eight. And it was try for try the whole way. Dragons scoring and Titans responding. And I ultimately thought that the Dragons had won this. At 14 all, 5 to go, Dragons had repeat set, about 15 straight tackles on the Titans line. Fifth tackle, you're thinking that a field goal, you know, is what the option they're looking for. But Hunt opts to run it and breaks the deadlock and scores a try. And when you score with 5 to go, to get in front, you know, you should win from there. You've it's really disappointing when you don't, but Lomax, I feel like it's not the first time he's missed a high pressure kick. Unfortunately, it wasn't sideline, but it was, you know, out wide. That opened the door of only putting the Dragons up four. And then certainly when the Titans regathered the short kickoff, well, they had the chance to win it. They got a repeat set of their own. And who was it? Sexton scored the winning try, and he had a really great game at 5'8" there. And to shout out a couple of other Titans, I know you probably would have mentioned these guys too, but Jaden Campbell, you know, great debut at fullback, you know, starting fullback this year. Sammy, what a great game by a winger. And then a couple of your high-profile forwards, Tino and Fifita, had their fingerprints all over this. In fact, those four players had almost 800 running meters between them, Clarky, so you had to be pumped.
Mate, I was absolutely pumped. Phil Sammy, you could see he just caught the UFC main event because he did the same celebration after he scored as the main event fighter when he got a knockout. I'll be honest, I actually felt pressure on myself, even though I can't influence the result in any way to do with this game. Just because Dragons fans absolutely give it to me after they beat us in round one. And I tipped them for the wooden spoon this year. So if they were to beat my side that I did not tip for the spoon two times in the span of 6 weeks, I would have been opening myself up to a lot of criticism. I've got a story here about Zach Lomax. So prior to the game, one of my friends who's also a Titans fan and a content creator tagged him in a story and said, "You're mine. You're not going to kick a goal." Like, it was just genuine banter. And he's the guy that's on the drums at Titans home games. You probably hear him through the TV. So out of the blue, Zach Lomax blocks him, blocks me, because I'm, I guess, friends with him. And so my previous interactions with Zach Lomax have always been positive. So after the game, my mate goes up to him and shakes his hand and says, you know, it's all banter, Zach. Like, you know, at the end of the day, happy to call it there. And he starts pointing at my friend's chest at the front of the Dragons bus. And starts firmly shaking his hand. And he says, "Oh, you're one of those guys. You're just a keyboard warrior." And my friend says, "Well, no, if I was a keyboard warrior, I wouldn't be here with you right now." And then Zach Lomax, this is on camera, he throws out the line. He goes, "Just remember, I get taxed more than you earn." And I looked up Lomax. He's on 700K. So looking at about 250K tax per year minimum without tax breaks. So yes, you definitely do get taxed a lot more than the rest of us, Lomax. But in the end, after he blocked me and missed that goal, Winnie, it was personal. And I screamed and I just started praying. I was on both knees. "Please, please, 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 God, just let us score. Just let us rise like Jesus on this glorious Easter." And my prayers were answered. And I was screaming and losing it. And I was just so happy. Toby Sexton, he scored the game winner. A couple minutes before that, Tanner Boyd, one of the best try savers you'll ever see. My heart was pumping. I was a sweaty mess after this. I had no voice left. I was just so happy. And, you know, there's so many big defensive moments in that, but Toby Sexton to come back to the NRL, he spoke in the week and said, "You know, I'm ready. I've been training really hard this whole time, got a lot of crap online," and he come back and gets a big moment like that. I'm so happy for him. I'm so happy for the Titans. And, sorry, Zach Lomax, but I'm so happy you missed that goal. Let's move on to the next Sunday game before I get in too much trouble on the show. The Knights defeat the Warriors. I almost hesitated there. I couldn't quite believe this result either. 34-24. My MVP was Tyson Frizzell. He was just everywhere. Try saver on one side, try saver on the other, try, you name it. I don't think many expected this one after the Warriors' fantastic comeback last week, Winnie. It did look at one stage they were going to come back in this one as well, but in the end it wasn't to be. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I saw it like a true 50-50, but I imagine most people probably tipped the Warriors, which probably showed you that the Knights might have been the sharpest side. Then going into the game, Tohu Harris, sorry, did you just say that? He was ruled out before kickoff?
He has ruled out with that, yes. MCL. Another week.
Right. So like then that probably tipped the scales in the Knights' favor, but I had in the back of my head, like, am I underestimating how much these teams poured into the Mudgee game because of what I'd seen from Manly? So I was kind of nervous there. Then you come into this game and the energy in the crowd was real. And I feel like that is an advantage. I've said this before, even though the Knights have been so bad at home, I think they're really determined to put that right this year. And this was another, you know, really strong proud performance that I don't know if they could have replicated if they weren't at McDonald Jones. And they got the strong start, you know, Dom Young again serving a reminder that he's got to be in the starting side. A great try. In fact, the Knights built the lead to 22-6 at halftime. Pong is in the crowd, you're seeing him on the screen, you know, it's great to see, great scenes. You knew the game wasn't over, but when the Knights looked to be up 28-6 because if people remember, they did actually score and were awarded a try coming out of the gate second half. Then you're thinking it's going to be a big win, but Bunker intervenes, tries overturned for obstruction. Next thing you know, the Warriors are back in the game. It's 22-18. And of course, as you said, they're off this historical comeback a week ago. So now you're thinking the Warriors could probably run over the top and win this. They were injury affected, but both sides were. Tamari Martin injured during the game. Jaden Brayley also. If you've got updates on the severity of those injuries, Clarkie, you can let people know. And in fact, the fact that Brayley was off meant Kurt Mann was playing makeshift nine, and he actually was the one that found the opening for a decisive try that got the Knights just that breathing room that ultimately allowed them to hang on and win this. But I made the same point. Tyson Frizzell winding back the clock. He looked like kind of vintage, you know, Kangaroos and Blues forward Tyson Frizzell. As they get more performances out of him, they're going to have a good year, the Knights. And again, it makes me feel good about my preseason value plays, because if you're on any of them, some of them kind of 17-1 or whatever for the Knights to be the most improved side this year. Look, they've gone 3 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw from 6 with a fairly kind draw, relatively. But when you consider the injuries and suspensions that they've got, knowing who's coming back into this side, they've got to be happy with the position that they're in right now.
Yeah, watched this game with a friend, and he said to me that he thinks Frizzell should be back in that Blues side. And I kind of agreed, but then I thought, you know, I just think they're going to go the way of younger players, Keon, Homoli.
They're so stacked for outside backs. Martin. In fact, didn't you just post that today? Or I saw it today, but you might have posted this weekend, a Blues side purely of players that have never debuted yet. And they've got like rep quality, you know, outside backs out the wazoo. The thing is, if Frizzell was going to play like he played yesterday every day, every week, yeah, then he would be. But I don't know if he can necessarily replicate that all the time, but it was awesome to see him wind back the clock.
Dare I say, even as a Queenslander, that Blues uncapped side is probably better on paper than our best side is at the moment. That's how much depth they've got. No update on those injuries yet, Winnie, but after recording, I do update every single injury and every player that's unavailable for Mondays, if anyone's interested in that.
Well, I heard that it's an MCL. No, meniscus. Is that meniscus. The same thing?
They're hoping it's not at least an ACL.
For Brayley, which, yeah, would only be maybe a month or something rather than a season ender, hopefully.
The interesting takeaway I sort of have from this game, Winnie, is you can look at games and almost overanalyze a little bit. And after Manly had played so poorly against Penrith, as you said, you start to think, well, it's the 90 minutes that's taken the toll. But there was 20 minutes in that second half, or maybe it was 25 minutes, but there was a long period where I had every indication the Warriors are going to come back similar to that Sharks game. They're coming over the top here. Knights are running out of troops. They're running out of energy at home. And I thought the Warriors had it. A few things didn't go their way, but I just go to the Knights straight away. To their credit, with nothing going for them, they found a way to win in front of their home fans. And that's 2 from 2 at McDonald Jones, which, as we touched on, coming into this year, they were 2 from 13 at home.
Two from the last two, because they did lose to the Dolphins.
Was that at McDonald Jones?
Yes.
Okay, so 2 from the last 3 all up this year.
Well, 2 from the most recent 2.
Yep.
But, 2 from 3 overall at home this year.
The key takeaway there is the Knights are starting to build McDonald Jones back up, potentially as a fortress, which it was in previous years, which I really like to see. They definitely turned it up for the home fans there. The Knights are a real interesting one on me. I've really struggled to put a finger on them this year. My first preseason picks, I had them as high as 9th. Everyone told me I was crazy. I saw them play in trials. I thought, okay, let's bring them back down to about 13th, 14th. But I will say I'm looking at them in a really positive light currently, because Caelan Ponga still yet to come back into this side, as is Jacob Saifidi, a Blues prop. The concern will be that Jaden Brayley injury. Fingers crossed for the best possible result there, because they did trade away Chris Randall, so it would leave them quite thin.
You know what? My mind was actually thinking the bloody Roosters. You know what they'll do? They'll pick up the phone and say, "Oh, Jake Turpin. Jake Turpin's a good player. You wouldn't want to release Dom Young. You've got Hunt there, and you didn't even pick Young the last couple." I know the Roosters. I hope the Knights don't do that. I hope that they can get by for a few weeks. I don't know who their reserve grade hooker is, or if they go Crossland or Man, you know, just get by. Don't give the Roosters Dom Young. Don't get hustled. That's what I'm hoping. And to touch on some comments, multiple comments coming through, which I think are a bit harsh. Paul and Matt there saying that the Knights are winning because they don't have Ponga. No, I won't go that far. I think, you know, Gamble was out as well on the weekend. When Ponga comes back, I think that elevates this side to a team that's in the mix for the top eight.
I think it does. I can't rule KP off a few bad games transition to six. It'll take time, but in the end, it's worth it. And at the end of his deal, the Knights will be paying him $1.6 million a year, so they've got to really make it work for them. But yeah, I'm holding the Knights in high regard. I mean, Winnie, this was a fantastic win for them in front of their home fans. Well-deserved. The Monday game that we just had, the Parramatta Eels defeat the West Tigers 28-22. I don't have my notes for this game, so I'm going completely off the top of my head. My MVP was Mitchell Moses, who had four try assists. It was a bit of a kicking masterclass in the end here. For the Tigers, they fall agonizingly short. And I do have a stat. This is the first time in their club history they've started an NRL season 0-6. Last year, 0-5, winning this corresponding game, but couldn't get it done today. They didn't look too bad, though, Winnie, if we're looking for some positives for Tigers fans, right?
Remember I said that on Wednesday, the second halves. I think every single week they've covered the line in the second half. So that's something. If they just would start the game this way, it was 18-6 at halftime. So it actually was eerily similar to that Bulldogs game at Belmore a few weeks ago. I think the score in that one might have been like 22-6, but similar in the sense that the Tigers were getting run off the field and their only try was an intercept try that day against Canterbury and again today. So it's not even like they looked like scoring. And that was the story of the first hour of this game to me. I thought it was Parramatta's defense. I thought West threw a bit at them. West were trying hard, had a fair bit of ball, but Parramatta never gave West anything in that first hour. Rock solid in defense. And when Parramatta got opportunities, they executed those ones and looked like they're going to win comfortably. However, that wasn't the whole story of the game. You know, as I'm watching, we could almost tell. I don't know if this game was on Channel 9. I was watching it on Fox and Vossi. He was begging for the Tigers to make it interesting. And he was, you know, he was agonizing every time they'd make an error when it looked like, you know, they were threatening to make a game of this. But they did, to their credit, pull it back, as we know, within one score. But even in true West Tigers fashion, even when they're making an exciting comeback, they're still just dishing pain to their fans because they score a try, but Naden's injured while scoring. And then they force a repeat set and Eels go short and Dewey catches a contested bomb and maybe did his ACL. In fact, I think I've seen, sadly, I've seen in the comments, people are reporting that it's been confirmed as an ACL. It looked like one of those ones where the weight comes down on the knee and it kind of buckles, not directly off contact. And that's horrible, you know, horrible news for West. And we've talked about how they've had to shuffle their spine multiple times this year, and that's a forced change. So, you know, that again, it's like even if they'd come back, that would have been a sour note. And then Charlie Staines, so we both questioned the pick. To be fair, he was busy all day and he plays with a lot of speed and he plays brave. He killed him or had a killer error when they had forced another repeat set and they were just down 2 points because Dewey, well, not that Dewey's the best goal kicker, but Coruscant had to take a sideline conversion to tie. And when he missed, they were down two, but they got a repeat set. And then Staines drops the dropout on the halfway line, which allows Parra to score. Even then, it wasn't quite over. So we got a dramatic finish just before we went live. But I think Parra just comes out of this game with just a sigh of relief saying, thank goodness we didn't have a repeat of 12 months ago.
Yes, and I was disappointed for the Eels because I thought they would have been fresh in their minds and I thought they would have played a lot better in this. My mind went to potential bets for this one. Throw darts at a board and whatever try score a stick, take them and put it with Eels 13 plus because they should have known from last year to not let this happen again. First 60, their goal line defense was actually solid. The Tigers' opportunities were coming out wide, sort of breaks off Mitchell Moses' pass that went to ground. You're right on Vossi. He had a call in that game that Gutherson should be sin-binned for using his captain's call. You could tell who Vossi wanted to win that one. I thought that was a funny moment. Moments later, the Tigers used theirs and Vossi's nothing to be said there. The unfortunate follow-on from this Adam Dwayhe or Dewey injury is, of course, he's off contract at the end of this year. That's really unfortunate timing for him. But it also ensures, against Tigers fans' best wishes, that Luke Brooks will remain in this side. Brent Wakeham, probably his partner at six there. But it keeps Luke Brooks with this side. It puts Luke Brooks in a better frame to re-sign with the Tigers. And it rules out the Dolphins move that we'd sort of discussed potentially happening on this show. Charlie Staines, I mean, he's just not a fullback. 200 plus meters. He had the effort, but the silly error like that, I think it is fair when you say he killed him. It's a little bit savage. Maybe people will think it's unfair, but the Eels score the next set. If he catches that, maybe Tigers score that set. We'll never know now. But honestly, for the Tigers, I want to stay positive for them because there were some genuine positives in this game. They had key injuries. On recent form, they had no right to be in this game. And they did give it a red-hot crack here. There's some serious improvement in this Tiger side. I need to do that second half post. I said I was going to do it over the weekend. I forgot. I've got to remember to do that.
That's some serious trivia. They'd be outscoring opponents all combined. As bad as they've been this year.
Yeah. And hopefully
I wouldn't expect that.
Hopefully the post goes a little bit global with that one. I'll give you a little credit and tiny little font down the bottom of the post. But in the end, the Tigers were tackled two times more than the Eels were in the Tigers half. So the theme for the Tigers season, for me at least, has been they are making it down the field, but they're just not polishing anything or putting together the right attacking sets. Really, you could argue that again today. I mean, being tackled two times more than your opponent in their half and coming up short, there's not too many sides that would come up short there. But for the Eels, how's this for a stat, Winnie? They have led at some stage in every single game this year, obviously going on to lose a big bunch of them. In this one today, it got very close to them having a lead and letting it slip away. Gutherson post-game said he believes players are not mentally all there. I'm not sure, but it's something the Eels do pretty much desperately need to address if they want to be a genuine contender in this competition. Anything else from yourself for round six before we wrap up this bad boy?
I think that's it, eh? We said we'd go a little bit quicker because one less day till our recap. Everyone's had a busy and tiring long weekend. In the end, we still went a solid 46 minutes there. But yeah, there was some crazy footy that we had to unpack. We hope you guys enjoyed it. We hope that you'll be back to join us to unpack round seven.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. That'll be a Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 6:30.
We're on the new time zones now.
I'm learning on the spot here. Hey, and that doesn't count towards the Luke Brooks first try scorer, Shuey on stream bet, just for the record. 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, guys. We'll see you there to preview everything round seven. Cheers.
Lego.